Let There Be Light. From Flashbangs and Frag Grenades. By Calchexis. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on League of Legends by Riot Games. Chapter 38. The Rungs of Me. The city was calling to her. It called to her in voices like breezes and shouts like gales. Seraphine could feel them as much as hear them. She could hear their hearts beat in time with one another like thunder in a mighty storm. And it drew her ever onward. She walked a tightrope over the vastness of Zaun as the rising tempest soared around her, and yet it left her untouched. No, not untouched. It could not touch her because it was her. She was the tempest. And so she was everything and everywhere. She was everyone that is and was. She was the memory of every first cry, death rattle, and breath between the cradle and the grave. Most overwhelming, though, were the voices. They cried out to her, and she called to them in kind. And there was so much pain and anguish, so much agony that could be soothed. And she was not strong enough. Her gale wasn't strong enough. So she had to get closer. Closer and closer she wandered the deep and the dark of Zaun, brushing her fingers across pockmarked lips and corroded lungs. She breathed life where there was death, brushed away poison and left clean air. But it wasn't enough. There were just so many of them. There was so much pain and it was everywhere. It was all around her, above her and beneath her and behind her. Sarah. A strong hand gripped her shoulder gently and Seraphine turned to look back at Renata, who was looking at her with worry in her eyes. What are you doing out here? Out. Seraphine turned back and realized she was standing at the balcony of her old room, the one she had occupied before she had fully moved into Renata's master suite. Sprawling out before her was the night-dappled Glasgardi ward and its pinpricks of light. They were little signs of life, twinkling in the darkness like neon stars. Even with her eyes open, she could still feel them, the endless echoes of a city in neglect, and she could hear their cries like distant birds. That was where Renata had found her again in the middle of the night, both dressed in sleep robes, although Renata's left sleeve was hanging limp from her missing prosthesis, which was probably still propped against the end table on Renata's side of the bed. Sarah, I have respected your boundaries and your silence for as long as I could, but I must ask you now. Renata gripped Seraphine's shoulder and turned her about until they were face to face. What is happening? Seraphine lowered her head and let out a shaky breath, then said, I couldn't let her die. She laid a hand over Renata's fingers and traced her scarred knuckles. She wants to save them, and so do I, and Jinx wasn't willing to do it, so, well, someone had to. The air thickened as Renata clenched her jaw around a single word. Janna. It was the right thing to do, Seraphine said, tipping her head up to meet Renata's eyes evenly. We need her, and just because Jinx couldn't take it doesn't mean I can't. Renata pressed her hands to her face and let a low growl as she carded her fingers back through her hair before saying, Do you know what it means to become an aspect? There is a good God's damned reason that Jinx said no. And I had a good God's damned reason for saying yes, Seraphine snapped, taking a step forward and matching Renata's glare. Janna Vren is a fundamental aspect of this world. She is the wind itself, Renata argued. She sweeps everything away. That's simply her nature. What will you do when you start forgetting yourself? When you start forgetting... Renata clenched her jaw shut and stiffened. Before she could step back, away from both Seraphine and her own heart. Seraphine grabbed her hand, dragged her back, and pressed herself hard against Renata.
I will never forget you, Renata. Not in 1,000 years or 100 million breaths. She won't take me away from you. She doesn't get to do that. No one gets to do that.
She's a goddess, Renata said softly as her arm went around Seraphine. Then buried her face in Seraphine's hair.
I don't care,
Seraphine murmured back. I'll fight her every step of the way if she tries, but until then we need her.
Except she was so weak.
She hadn't much strength left when she confronted Jinx, and when Jinx had violently expelled her, it had robbed Janna of almost everything she'd had left. Seraphine had been careful, though. She had carefully nurtured Janna's strength with her own in secret. Lux could never know. Nor could Jinx. They both had an irrational hatred of the Wind Goddess after what she'd tried to pull with Jinx. And frankly, Seraphine didn't blame them. Janna had badly misunderstood their bond. And even more badly underestimated Jinx's resolve. She could see snippets of Janna's memories, bits and pieces of what had transpired between her and Jinx. And Seraphine could only shake her head in dismay. For being a goddess, Janna couldn't possibly have chosen a worse vessel than Jinx. Sure, on paper it seemed perfect. Jinx was already an object of faith, and becoming an aspect would only increase that faith. And in doing so, all of that power would suddenly funnel into Janna. Except it was never going to go that way. Jinx would literally rather see the world and everyone in it burn than risk losing her wife. And Lux was the same way. Jinx was never going to accept being Janna's vessel, and because Janna had so badly misread her, she was barely a flicker of wind. She couldn't even speak. She could only communicate with Seraphine in flashes of concepts and memories. The occasional vision or urging was the best she could manage.
There's no arguing with you, is there? Renata murmured.
No, but there never is, Seraphine said, more than a little smugly, as she leaned into Renata more gently.
If I can hold on to her, then we can win this war. She just needs to be strong enough.
She took Renata's face in her hands.
I can protect everyone.
But who will protect you? Renata murmured before pressing a kiss to Seraphine's brow. Seraphine tipped her head up and caught Renata's lips with her own, draped both arms over her broad shoulders, and drew herself up and in to deepen the kiss. Renata was a hard woman. That much was evident in everything she did. There were scars on what felt like every few inches of her skin, and her lips were full but toughened with time and hard living. She was as strong as she was brittle. But for all that, Renata Glask was strong.
I guess, Seraphine said as she pulled back from Renata,
that will have to be you. And I'm sorry about that, because it's not going to be easy and it's not going to be happy.
Tears burned at the corners of Seraphine's eyes.
It'll probably be miserable work, actually.
No, Renata said gently. Not if it's you.
Seraphine's heart seemed to swell in her chest at those words. And she took Renata's hand and pulled the palm to her lips for her to kiss before laying her cheek against its broad expanse, looking up and saying,
I'm tired. Let's go back to bed.
Do let's, Renata muttered wearily. Taking Renata's arm, Seraphine molded herself against Renata's side and walked with her back to the master suite. Every night lately, things had been this way. She would sleep and dream of voices and wind, and she would follow it. And she would find herself awake somewhere where she could feel the breeze on her face. It was dangerous, she knew. And it was getting more intense lately, which meant that Janna was certainly getting stronger. That was both good and bad. Good in that her strength was Zahn's strength,
and bad in that Seraphine had perhaps slightly overstated how much control she had over the goddess to Renata. But this was the way things had to be. They had to be prepared for whatever horrors Camille Pharos would levy against Zaun in the coming days. And those horrors would come. She could feel it in her bones that Camille wasn't going to take her latest string of losses lying down. She was waiting for something. And the only question was, what? It wouldn't happen tonight, though. Tonight, Seraphine was going to curl up in bed and let Renata hold her until all the bad thoughts went away. Or at least until the thoughts were as far away as they could get. The Glasgotty Ward was a tumultuous place for the next few days and would continue to be so for quite some time. Zaunite parties didn't tend to follow strict schedules, and with the Noxian supplies flowing in, they were no longer rationing food, water, or indeed liquor. It was that last thing that would probably see the most consumption. Hilariously, they weren't even going into debt with Noxus to acquire these supplies either, and the funniest part of it all was that they could thank Piltover for that. Zaun was not a place for manufacturing anything but the crudest machining. It turned metal into differently shaped pieces of metal, and shipped them off to Piltover where they would be finished, or else the raw materials would go directly to Piltover machine shops, or to Piltover refining houses. If not to Piltover, they would go to specific chem baronies, like the Mech Ward or the Verdant Ward, where they would be turned into finished products that would inevitably be sold in Piltover. Now, all of those goods that might have otherwise been cluttering up the warehouses of their respective owners were being funneled into Noxus. Noxian clans were paying very good money for what, a year ago, had been rare Zaunite perfumes and chemical materials that Piltover had once jealously kept for themselves, materials that Noxus had long coveted for their explosives manufacturing. In a twist of irony, the chem barons were seeing record profits. Glask Industries had never been richer, and Renata was turning those profits around and converting them into bullets and blades and funding for Singed and Victor. The same was true of the rest of the chem barons, even Margot. Since, as it turned out, Noxian sailors were just as fond of Zaunite brothels as they were of their own. More so, in fact, for its exotic nature. As Renata understood it, Noxians thought they understood decadence right up until they met Zaunite joy girls, who would do things that would make even a seasoned Noxian consort blush to the tips of her ears. In short, despite being at war, Zaun had never been wealthier, and that wealth was flowing back into the Glasgotty Ward as Renata prepared for the one thing she had never thought she would have to prepare for in all of her long life. Her wedding.
Miss Glask, the Noxians haven't arrived with the last shipments of immortal ale.
They have 3 days to complete the shipment, Foreman, Glask replied to the rail-thin man who was following behind her with a checklist. If they haven't delivered it by tomorrow morning, then I will become concerned, but until then they have time.
Yes, sir, but...
Renata turns to regard him coolly, and he froze like a rat beneath the eyes of a sump snake. Before you continue, I would like you to ask yourself if this is something that requires my direct attention, or if it may in fact be something you could attend to yourself, given that I have provided you 10-full work crews and the authority of my name. The foreman swallowed thickly, then nodded and said,
I'll just, see to these lost things myself.
You do that, Renata replied as she turned away and continued walking. It only occurred to her, as she was halfway through inspecting one of the larger stages that were being erected, that she had let the man go without a reprimand. There had been the threat under her words, of course, but Renata Glask had never been one to bandy about with subtext. She often found that people missed such things or willfully ignored them, and that it was often faster and more effective to simply grab them round the neck and shake them about a bit to make sure the message really sank in. Suppressing a sigh, Renata left the stage behind as she made her way towards her real goal. It was a small section of Glasgotty Ward that was quite different from the rest. It wasn't far from her tower, a few hours' walk which she had just made, and it was distinctive only in that it was not used for anything. In a place like Zaun, where space was at a premium, an empty lot must have seemed like a terrible waste.
Still, Renata had always kept it empty, and reasoned it out by telling herself that it was a reminder, and that it was important to keep it empty so that if she ever lost track of herself, she could return there, and remember why she was doing what she was doing. This place was empty for that reason alone, or rather it had been empty. She had once gone to great expense to ensure that the lot was patrolled and kept clear of garbage, graffiti, and squatters. Now it was bustling with activity as her finest manufacturing crews erected an appropriate venue for her wedding to Seraphine. 2 dozen rows split down the middle of 200 seats each, fashioned from steel and which, in the process of being prepared for cushioning, were already mostly set into the paneled floor. An archway was being erected at the front where Seraphine would enter, and an altar was being raised opposite it where Renata would stand. The altar was a farce, of course. There were no deities or aspects that Renata felt particularly important, but it was more about having the feel of it be right. Electrical wiring that had long lain dormant beneath the floor plates was being exhumed and refitted for use, while lights were being strung all around the metal pillars that were being raised about the seating and altar. It would be open air, and the street beyond was being cleared of trash and graffiti, and widened to allow for spectators. It was the only thing that Renata could think of in terms of layout, and besides, she wanted all of Zaun to see them. No, not them. Seraphine. Renata could have cared less if the world could see her, but not so with Seraphine. She deserved to be marveled at by the whole world. Seraphine Arctura was a woman like no other, and she deserved to feel like that for at least one day. Even if Renata could not give her what she deserved, it behooved her to try her best to get as close as possible. It was amidst those melancholic thoughts that Renata's ears picked up the dull thrum of hoverboard engines, and she turned as 4 firelights descended, with their owl-masked leader at the fore. "You know you don't need that here," Renata said, nodding at Echo's mask. "The air is fine."
"Yeah, well, force of heaven,"
Echo said as he kicked his board up into a hand. He and each of his subordinates were clutching a large sealed box to their hips, and Echo held his out as he approached Renata.
"You said you wanted to check him yourself, right? Well, here you go."
Renata took the offered box and thumbed the button along the side. It snapped open with a soft hiss and a rush of warm, fragrant air.
"You got any idea how hard it was to get those?"
Echo continued. "You and your crew were very well compensated, and we both know it," Renata said as she sifted through the box's contents. Echo snorted derisively.
"Yeah, well, we did it for Sarah, not you,"
he said.
"Though I gotta admit..."
The leader of the firelights removed his mask with a pneumatic hiss. "Then of all the people to have a sentimental streak, I wouldn't have bet on you." "Good," Renata replied as she closed the box and handed it back to him. "Take these to my conservatory and give them to Karina and only Karina. Are we clear?" Turning to his crew, Echo shoved his box into the arms of one of his men. They exchanged a few quick words, and for a moment Renata was left wondering if they were trying to decide whether or not to haggle for more. Renata sincerely hoped the answer was no, since she would hate to have to make an example out of any of them so close to the wedding, especially since Seraphine seemed to actually like Echo and his motley crew of bug-themed bully boys. There was no haggling, though, and the firelights, minus Echo, took off toward her tower. "Was there something more?" Renata asked as she turned back to watch the open lot before her being transformed into something more purposeful. "Sorta," Echo said as he stepped up beside her. "Just that I'm trying to figure you out, Miss Glask." "Are you now?" Renata smiled faintly. "Any luck?" For a moment he was silent, and Renata took the opportunity to observe him from the corner of her eye. In truth, she'd always had a modicum of true respect for Echo. He was hopelessly idealistic, but he was also pragmatic enough to be effective. And one didn't survive being a thorn in as many sides as he'd been by being stupid. Renata had always considered it a bit of a shame that he was so stiff-backed, but now that they shared a side in the war, she could appreciate it a little more. He was a rare thing in Zaun, not a killer, nor even a soldier. Echo was a leader,
And a fairly good one at that. You know, I could begin after a long stretch of silence. I always thought I had you figured, Glask. You were always just meaner and less ambitious SoCo to me. He looked up at her with a frown. But now, I don't know. I don't get it. What is it you've got to gain from any of this? SoCo was a complicated man, but ultimately he suffered from a lack of focus, Renata said. I suffer no such lack, and I am far more patient than him. Looking down at him, she met his eyes. As for what I have to gain, I gain that which I have worked towards for my entire life since Piltover burned my mother and father alive before my eyes, which is vengeance. Echo grimaced. Shit, that's a... Shit. Piltover killed your parents, too. He shook his head. Chalk up having shit in common with Renata Glask as something I figured would never happen and did. Shit, indeed, and in fact, Renata said as she turned and pointed toward the rising structure. They died right over there. Echo stared at her for a moment as if trying to decide if she was joking or not, then turned and followed her finger to a space just to the left of the altar. This was your... Echo trailed off as he turned back to her. Right here? More or less, Renata replied. My father's laboratory was there. She gestured to the open space to the left of the altar. He died first when the enforcers threw firebombs through the windows and the chemicals caught. She pointed down to a spot not far from the archway that served as the entrance. My mother was there, she said. She had tried to get to my father, but he was already dead, and she was caught in a secondary explosion. I was nearby, and my whole left arm was splattered with burning chemical acid. I remember it coming off as I tried to get my mother clear of the wreckage, but there wasn't very much left of her by that point. And you're getting married here, Echo said. Renata nodded. Do you know, she began, why I kept this place completely clear for all the years since I bought Glasgowny Ward? Enlighten me, I guess, Echo replied. Context, Renata said as she stared into the past. Every time I came here, I would remember the heat of the fire that killed my father and the sound of my mother's screams, and the feeling of my arm peeling away from my shoulder. She locked her hands behind her back to keep them from shaking. It was on to remind myself why I was sacrificing my people, my money, and my life. She did not have Silco's lofty goals of a glorious nation. She had simple goals. Renata wanted the people who had killed her family and every single person related to them unto their entire city dead. That wouldn't happen now. Not as she had envisioned in her madder moments, anyway. Piltover would fall, though. And Renata had decided that she would be satisfied with that much. A single act of violence by a single greedy Piltover mixed with a single lifetime of hate would be the end of the City of Progress. So, what changed? Echo asked as he nodded towards the building. Don't need the reminder anymore? No, I don't, Renata said. We are very close to either fulfilling my ambitions or to our collective executions. In either case, this empty space has served its purpose, and so I am designating a new purpose for it. What's that? Context, Renata replied. Echo frowned, then shook his head before saying, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that the same purpose? It's not for me. Renata said, it's for Seraphine. It will be the context by which she rules my barony when I am gone. Echo cut himself off as he turned to her with wide eyes. You're giving up your barony? Renata shrugged.
Why not? She asked. By the end of this war, it will have served its purpose, and even if I am still alive, I'll have no more need of it. But Seraphine will, and she will do better than I did. And after I am gone, if she ever finds herself wondering why she's doing it, then I will have left her this place to come back to. Renata took a deep breath and tipped her head back to look up as a rare moment of peace came over her. It's always about context, dear boy. Remember that. An oddly companionable silence settled between them. It was a strange thing to suddenly be standing back to back with someone you once considered not even an enemy, but a nuisance. Echo was surprisingly reliable, though, which probably shouldn't have surprised her since he had quite reliably fucked up her shipping schedules more than once. And he was so young. But then again, Zaun was where youth came to die. It was where innocence withered on the vine, and only the very strongest of souls held on to anything like hope. Seraphine and Echo were just such a pair of souls. "Can I ask you something else?" Echo said. And his voice had taken on a softer timbre. "I suppose so," Renata replied without looking at him. "Why Seraphine?" Renata chuckled at that, because it was a question she had so often asked herself, and she had only ever come up with two paired answers that satisfied her. "Because she's the only one to whom I cannot lie, even when I am lying to myself," Renata replied. "And because she's the only one I've ever met who might be angrier and more stubborn than I am." "Huh." Echo huffed out a laugh. "Fair enough." Turning away, Echo flipped his board down to the ground, leaned forward, and primed the engine. It spun up with that dull thrum and slowly lifted him up. Renata watched him rise out of the corner of her eyes, and she called out, "Context, dear boy. If you bother remembering anything, remember that it's always about the context." He gave her a mocking salute before taking off in the direction of the tower and his men, leaving Renata to observe the construction of the place where she and Seraphine would be getting married. It was a fitting end to the dark memories of this place. And somewhere in the depths of her heart, she wondered, maybe, if it happened here, maybe her parents might see it.
The text of this story is available on AO3. Music by Dot Matrix. If you would like me to record a story, voice over a character, get in touch using the contact information available on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as a link to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.